You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show once again, and as always, but not really, I am your host, Dear Prudence, also known as Mallory Ortberg. We're on holiday this week, so this week we're revisiting some of our favorite letters from 2017. I'm not really here. I'm a ghost. You only think that you're listening to me. This has been pre-recorded weeks in advance. I am so out of here. I'm somewhere else doing stuff that isn't work. I hope that maybe you get to do some stuff that isn't work soon as well. And I wish you all the best. Please enjoy some of the highlights from the last year without me. The subject line of this one is just personal ATM. So you know where this one's heading.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Prudence, I've known my best friend for 25 years. We're both nurses, and we've both been there for each other in every important moment in one another's lives. My husband and I are financially secure. My friend and her husband are not, and I'm tired of lending her money. Her husband refuses to work and has done so for the last 10 years, even though he has no health problems, and she supports him and their child. They live beyond their means, they eat out at fancy restaurants, and they take frequent vacations. They never save money, and were recently evicted from their apartment and had to move out of state. I've given her thousands of dollars in the past, but I make a lot less money than she does, and my husband is getting tired of my pulling money out of our joint account. I don't splurge on much for myself, but I always try to keep a cushion in my savings account. Yesterday, my friend told me that her car had just been repossessed and she wants help getting another one. She's never made any attempt to pay me back for any of the money I've given her, and I'm starting to dread taking her calls because it's usually about her latest financial crisis. Her husband shows no remorse or embarrassment about, quote-unquote, borrowing money from everyone they know. I would not hesitate to help them again, but her husband seems content living this way. She has very little family, and the ones who are still alive do not speak to her. I don't understand how anyone could live this way without feeling some sort of obligation to reimburse those who have helped them, even if it was just $20 a month. Please help me understand this way of thinking and how to proceed in the future. I don't ever see this ending. Do you ever see this ending?
Yeah, end it.
Yeah,
for goodness sake.
This could end right the hell now, ma'am.
Yeah.
Or sir.
No, but again, you know, you're right. The situation as it's presented here is super clear cut. But then the question is, can you help me to understand this other person?
No.
No.
Why would you bother understanding it?
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
The question is to understand why you have continued to exist in this relationship.
You know, the sentence, I would not hesitate to help them again, bowled me over. Like, if it weren't for the fact that her husband
working too.
No, he's not working. The letter writer's husband is working.
Yes.
The friend's husband is not.
Sorry, that was what I thought I was saying.
No, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, the problem's the husband. If the husband would get a job, I'd lend them money for the rest of my life, which is, you know, in accordance with the theme of today's show, which is raise the bar. Raise the bar a little higher for the circumstances under which you would lend or give someone else money.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's just forever, for any reason, you may not be as helpful as you would like to be.
Take yourself to a fancy restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, your husband is mad at you for pulling money out of your joint account.
I would be too.
To the tune of thousands and thousands of dollars over the last couple of decades. I'd be mad as hell if I were your husband.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that your husband still has a joint account with you. If your husband is listening, husband, start your own savings account that your spouse does not have access to. Because right now, they are not in a place where they are respecting your joint income. That's some of your money that is going to fund this other couple in a way that's not helpful. It's not useful to them. They're not getting any benefit out of it. It's not helping them break any cycle. They're not in any sort of circumstance where, you know, through no fault of their own, they are like the victims of circumstance. They're just, they really love going to, I don't know, I'm mad at them. So in my mind, they love going to like Outback Steakhouse.
Mm. God. Well, okay, so the basic premise here is you don't have to lend this person any more money. You really, really, really do not.
Yeah.
But the questions, I think, come after that moment or after that acknowledgement. Questions like, what have you been getting out of this relationship? Why has this person been able to extract so many thousands of dollars from you and your husband over so many years? How are you going to live without whatever feeling of satisfaction or placated guilt that has given you? Those are big questions.
Yeah.
And the situation that is being described here is also pretty serious, because it must be very, very frustrating for you. And there's a kind of in for a penny, in for a pound logic, or a kind of logic of infinite escalation, where to cut the friend off now would seem to be like sinking costs or cutting one's losses. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine that that's very painful, and it's a difficult thought to contemplate. But I do think that there is a way forward from this moment for you and for your husband. And I think part of that has to acknowledge the possibility. I certainly can't say certainty, but the possibility that this friend has been directly manipulating you both, or manipulating you specifically. It certainly seems possible that they are acting with malicious rather than merely complacent intent.
Yeah, I think one view of events that you will have to at least contemplate, and it will be very sad, is that this friend does not care about you.
Yeah.
And that they see being there for you as an investment in a cash cow.
Right.
And I'm not saying that that's 100% what's going on. It could be that they genuinely care about you, but are also willing to, let the situation go on forever without checking to see if you're okay with it. Like, it's not necessarily true that they don't care about you, but that is one possibility.
It is.
Is that they see you as a bank account as nothing and nothing else. And part of why I think this is so hard is, you guys, it doesn't sound like you've ever really had a long-term big picture conversation. Of what does it feel like when I lend you money? What does it feel like when you borrow money? Do we understand this as a loan or a gift? Do you have any thoughts about how things will be different in the future? What will happen if you never pay me back? What would our friendship look like if this constant exchange of money wasn't going on? Like, a lot of these are really big questions, and I don't want to make it sound like any friendship where somebody borrows money, even on a regular basis, is necessarily one where a person is being taken advantage of, because I don't believe that that's true. But in this instance, it sounds like this is a relationship where you have resented your friend's husband for not working, but you haven't brought that up. You haven't talked about what you're giving the money to do. And I think part of what's terrifying is not the idea just of stopping giving the money, but talking about what you've been doing for the last decade or more. And something that you've been doing, like, you're not just about to cut your friend off, you're about to cut yourself off. Because whatever you've been getting out of this relationship, you've spent thousands of dollars on it.
Uh-huh.
You've been buying thousands of dollars worth of something from your friend. And I don't know if that's a feeling of superiority, of like a sense of I am a together, helpful, useful, good person. I don't know what it is, but you've been, she's been your supplier of whatever that feeling is for mm-hmm. a long time. And you're about to stop buying. And that's going to be hard for you. And I think you should prepare for that.
Yeah. And I think I think there are two really important conversations that need to take place. One of them is with your friend, where you begin to explore some of these questions. And the other is with your husband, because it seems to me that that relationship is also going to need some repair as a result of this set of experiences.
Right.
And trying to work out, how have you been relating to your husband during this time where you've been using your joint bank account for this purpose? What does it mean about the shared expectations that you have of that relationship? The shared sense of that relationship. And I think the marriage has a real chance to grow at this point, has a real chance to strengthen, but it is going to be a difficult conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think that should be your priority right now, is repairing mm-hmm. your relationship with your husband. And in terms of like practicalities, what happens next? How do you proceed in the future? You tell your friend, I'm not going to lend you any more money.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a good reason. You don't have to convince her it's the right thing to do. You don't have to explain yourself. You just get to say, I'm not going to lend you any more money.
Yeah.
And then you get to stick to that. And your friend may respond in any one of many ways. Your friend might acknowledge all you've done for them. they might get angry. They might plead or have an emotional breakdown. They might respond in any one of 100 different ways. And you get to remember that, you know, your friend and her husband are both adults with resources, with at least some employment, with the ability to change their behavior, with the ability to, you know, live more within their means, and that you cannot do that for them. Yeah. So you get to say, I'm not going to lend you any more money. And that's going to be really hard. And you're going to feel like if your friend tries to fight with you about it, that you're going to have to convince her. And if you can't, you have to give her more money. Nope. You guys don't have to agree on it. You can just say, I'm not going to give you any more money. And if your friend's response is to storm at you or to cut you off, then you'll have a pretty good answer to that question of, does my friend see me as a person who is also sometimes giving her money, or does my friend see me as money? Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling, based on the fact that they've never even tried to throw $20 your way, or it sound like thank you, it's likely to be the sadder one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't have to understand this way of thinking. Stop trying to understand this way of thinking.
Dude, also, on one level, it's a very straightforward way of thinking to understand. Free money.
Yeah. You know, free money, and they don't care about you.
Yeah.
Is how they're thinking about it.
Yeah.
They don't care about you the way that you care about them, and that sucks. And of course you keep thinking, but I wouldn't do that. That's why you don't do that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's a reason you wouldn't do that. Even if you were in a situation where you needed to borrow money from a friend, you would do it differently than the way that they did, because you care about people differently. And I think also better than they do. And that's really sad. But this is a friendship where I think once you stop handing out free money, you will be surprised by how much you two, by how much your friend no longer is there for you in every important moment in your life. And I'm really sorry. That sucks.
It sucks.
This question, Mike, has like, I had to like sit down. I am so confused by this. And I feel like there's one of two possible answers, and they're both super different. So I'm going to go ahead and read this letter, and we're going to figure out which scenario I think is really going on.
Sure.
Dear Prudence, my son is married to his second wife, Loretta, whom I adore. They've been together for 4 years and married for two. Loretta and I have a great relationship. We've never had a single conflict. She loves my son, treats him with respect, and has a great head on her shoulders. If I could have gone to the daughter-in-law store and picked out their best model, I would have picked her. The problem I have is with my son. He's 31, he has a successful career, and he's going to grad school. He's an all-around great guy. However, he has some pretty odd viewpoints about certain things, one of which has caused a lot of conflict between him and me. Since the very beginning of their relationship, if I want to ask Loretta about what she might want for her birthday or Christmas, or plan a get-together either with just her or with her and my son, or just call her to talk, my son says that I have to go through him and should not contact her directly. He discourages all direct communication from me to her. Loretta has never indicated in any way that she doesn't want me to get in touch with her. Over the past 4 years, we've spent some very pleasant times together, just the two of us. Loretta and my son have a very happy and healthy relationship, and he is not abusive. He doesn't place this requirement on any other person in their circle of family and friends, just me. When I observe the two of them together, they treat each other as equals. He's not overbearing, and she isn't quiet and submissive. He also never had this requirement in place when he was married to his first wife. Loretta is very busy with a full-time job and their daughter, and I don't want to spend endless hours on the phone chit-chatting with her and taking up lots of her time. I'd just like to feel free to call her to ask what she wants for her birthday, or to schedule the occasional group dinner. His reason for this rule is that it's quote-unquote not normal for a mother-in-law to communicate directly with her daughter-in-law. From my own personal experience with my mother-in-law when I was married to his father, this is definitely normal. The most recent occurrence of this non-communication rule came when he was out of the country, and I learned that I needed to have minor surgery. I asked Loretta to see if she'd be able to drive me to the hospital, and she said she'd be happy to. She didn't sound annoyed or fake nice. She really did say she would be happy to do this for me. Now when my son came back, he told me that he would be taking me instead, and that Loretta had commitments that day, and that I shouldn't have gotten in touch with her at all. I'm confused and frustrated. I very much want to talk to Loretta about this and find out how she feels, but I'm really worried about adding fuel to the fire with my son because I know she would tell him that I called her to discuss this and he would unleash his anger on me. I also don't want to put her in an awkward position. I don't even know if she knows about his rule. And whether she did or didn't, my son would be angry with me for discussing it with her. I've tried everything I know to convince my son that he's being unreasonable and hurtful, that it's not weird for a mother-in-law to call her daughter-in-law, and that there's no need for such an outlandish boundary. I'm kind to my daughter-in-law. I love her. And I want to be able to call her up and talk to her just like any other normal mother-in-law. Signed, Sad Mom. By the way, this was originally a lot longer.
Wow.
I had to cut down a lot of it. And like, this has clearly been going on for a long time. And it's just really weird. You're in a long-term relationship, right? I don't remember if you're married or not, but like, you've got kind of an in-law situation.
I am in a relationship that's been about a year now. I have been married, so I have had in-laws. And I guess the first thing that jumps out to me, that even if it is weird, it's not bad. Like, everything that's weird isn't bad, and it would be fine if everybody was fine with it. For any two people who want to talk to each other can talk to each other. So that part, additionally, combined with this thing, makes it stranger to me that it was fine in the first marriage, that it happened and wasn't forbidden and wasn't seen as not normal. So I don't know. I mean, is it possible that Loretta, the woman, the wife in this situation, has some problem that she's not sharing and she doesn't want to talk directly and she is just a really good liar like, there's so much that we don't know.
Yeah, no, that was my first thought, too. And I was trying to, like look through this letter to look for signs that somehow the mother-in-law has been doing something really out there. Because my first thought was, oh, Loretta just asked your son to do this, and he's, like, being the bad guy on her behalf, and she's just, like, a super good actor. And she is 100%. This is all coming from her. You only think you guys get along great. That's why you've never had a conflict, because she outsources all of her conflict to your son.
But I've read and listened to you for a while, and every once in a while there's a letter from somebody who thinks they're the hero but are definitely the villain of the story. But
I don't get that vibe from this.
She does not lack the self-awareness. She seems everybody's doing a great job at seeming reasonable. But
except for the son.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Why is he being mean about it?
Right. I've kind of been going back and forth over this, too. I've been having the same problem. Like, the letter, it's long and it's definitely full of feeling, but it does not feel like she has unreasonable expectations.
No.
It doesn't sound like she's been asking really outrageous things. Like, there's nothing in this letter that suggests to me, oh, I can kind of see why your kid actually might want to set some boundaries and avoids having hard conversations with you because you sound like you overreact to stuff. Like, that doesn't seem to be the case here. So, like, either Loretta is, for whatever reason, really conflict avoidant, really doesn't like you, and has asked your son to sort of be this stand-in guard dog on her behalf, or your son's being, like, really out of line, and I don't know why, because you sound pretty nice. And I'm just like, I feel like I'm missing something here.
The advice that I have is, like, when letter writer, you say, should I talk to Loretta, but my son might be mad? I've tried talking to my son. Like, I feel like, I'm sure that you have, if you are the reasonable person that you present as, that seems to understand and want reasonable things from your life and family and the people who care about the people that you care about and who you care about, then, I mean, I guess I would say, I would recommend trying to talk to your son about how, like, it doesn't make sense that even if it is weird, which it isn't, it wouldn't be bad if it was weird, which it isn't, as evidenced by your last marriage, that's a specific concrete piece of advice I can say is, say to your son, why was this not a rule in your last marriage? And see what he says to that. If he has some reason that you can't think of, that I can't think of, that Mallory can't, that, I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but that seems fair to say, like, hey, like, kind of one last ditch effort to talk about it with him before having the possibility of talking to Loretta, which I don't necessarily want to advise you to do, because I want to at least explore the possibility of what would it look like if you just accepted that this is a weird rule your son has. But we'll put a pin in that for a second. So, yeah, one last talk with your son and just say, like, I'm not looking to become Loretta's best friend. I'm not looking to call her 5 hours a day. I am confused because in your last marriage, I would periodically have, I assume, like normal contact with your wife and it worked out fine. Did I do something to your wife? Was there something I did that she didn't like that you didn't feel like you could tell me that makes you feel like it's necessary to put this rule in place? Because I don't understand. This has not historically been how I've interacted with your previous partners. So I don't understand why you think it's not normal for a mother-in-law and daughter-in-law to talk. Like, that's not my experience with my own mother-in-law. That wasn't my experience with your last wife. Can you explain why you all of a sudden feel this need?
And can I have another idea that,
yeah.
I mean, my normal advice in a situation where you're like, it seems like you can't control this. And so if you never get the answer that you want, then you have to be the one to just be like, well, this is how it is. I don't want to worry about it forever because I'll never know. So I have to, you know, come to terms with it. But this is your son. This is your family. This will be, hopefully for a while, the people that you know and care about and want to connect to. The only other hope that I have is, she says she's the only person this rule applies to. Is there somebody else in your family that you're close to that might have any clue? Like, because it can't be, I mean, do you talk to other people? Are you close with, you know, your extended or non-extended family? I don't know who else there is who is allowed to talk directly to your son's wife, but I don't usually want to advocate being like it sounds like sort of second grade to be like, you know, check this box. If like, does this person like me? Why doesn't this person like me? But that at some point might be the only recourse that I think only in this situation seems maybe reasonable to be like, do you, or even not to like ask them to go ask the person, but do you know why this might be? Am I a certain way with anybody that would make it reasonable to have this apply to me and me alone? Like, am I unreasonable? How am I unreasonable?
No, and I think that's fair. I think that's a good point, Mike, because it's not just that you're trying to like dig up dirt on your kid or trying to like triangulate your relationship with him. You're kind of doing the emotional equivalent of like, hey, do I have anything in my teeth?
Yeah.
Like, before you decide whether or not this is worth escalating conflict, you want to double check to make sure, like, am I seeing my own behavior as objectively as possible? Like, I think I am, but I want to do a double check before I run the risk of inciting a conflict between my son and me or my son and his wife. So to ask somebody else in the family that you care for and trust and to say, I'm really looking hard in my own past. I want to be open to feedback and criticism. And if you don't know, you don't know. But like, can you think of any reason why my son might feel that this is necessary? And to be open to, if you hear something that feels really surprising or jarring, to kind of sit with it, think through it, ask yourself if there could be any truth to it. Try that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
There could be something like that. People love you. People care about you. They're in your family. They want what's best for you. If there is something that they aren't telling you, they're doing it out of love because they care about you, but they are letting you walk around with this emotional, you know, stain on your teeth, this something that is there that is affecting you. And if they could understand, if you can let them know for sure that hopefully you're open to hearing whatever they say, the truth will be the best thing for everybody in this situation. Because right now, none of us have it.
Yeah. So let's put that aside for a minute and say, okay, let's say no one has a good answer for you. No one's like, oh, yes, you did this really bananas thing that was awful or whatever. And you need to figure out, okay, can I see my way through to saying it's a weird rule? I don't get it. I don't like it. But since I don't see any sort of signs of abuse, I don't have any cause to be concerned about the healthiness of their marriage. And I might be willing to adhere to this kind of weird rule that my son has put in place. If it means, you know, that's the way that their marriage is set up for whatever reason, I don't have to understand it. I still get to see them. It's not like he's keeping her from me. I still get to have positive interactions with them. And this is something that I don't have to like, but I can respect. And I think that's possible. I think you could do that. That's a low conflict route. But I think sometimes people have rules that we don't necessarily like or understand, but we can accept. That's one possibility. The other one is you can talk to Loretta. You run the risk on a couple of fronts, right? Like, one is she has been asking your son to do this. She will not give you a straight answer. You will not learn anything, and you'll just kind of both feel weird around each other. Like, that's a possibility. You'll say, Loretta, I feel uncomfortable bringing this up. I'm not quite sure what to do. I understand if you don't want to discuss this, but I did want to ask. You know, my son has told me repeatedly not to contact you. I feel like you and I have a good relationship. I would like to be able to occasionally call you up and chat, find out what you want to do for your birthday. Is that okay with you? But to bear in mind that it may not be, and you might not get a straight answer. But I don't think that's an outrageous thing to say to her. Like, yes, probably you will put her in a slightly uncomfortable situation. It probably will feel a little weird. You might hear her be really surprised. Like, she might be like, I had no idea that he said that, and I'm confused. And that might be one possibility. But I think you could do that.
Yep.
You just really run the risk of getting not a straight answer. And then I think you would have to let it go.
It is. You definitely, if you've presented everything faithfully, you have a real stumper of a problem.
Yeah. But yeah, so like, let's say you have that conversation and you get everything you wanted out of it. She says, I didn't know he had that rule. I genuinely like you. I'm not sure what he's doing. Please do feel free to occasionally call me. And then I think the best thing you can do is just say to your son, Loretta and I don't need this rule. We're comfortable calling one another. I'm not going to try to call her to talk about you or to like get the dirt on you. I'm not trying to like get in between you and your wife and your marriage. But if I want to know what she wants for Christmas, I'm going to text her. And I hope that's okay. That's not an unreasonable thing to want. So that's like the probable best case high conflict scenario, right? Is like Loretta gives you the green light. You guys are comfortable. You get to sort of gently say to your son, I'm not trying to manage your marriage or get in the middle of it. I just want to sometimes call her and I'm going to do that. And if your son totally blows up, then you and Loretta can sort of be like, that's weird. Why do you think he's doing that? And then you get to be the sort of sane, reasonable one, which is always a nice place to be. Or, like, you know, yeah. You talk to her and she's like kind of weird, kind of evasive. Your son gets mad at you and then, you know, you kind of get your wrist slapped for kind of getting in the middle of their marriage. And I think at that point you would just have to apologize and retreat. And that's a bummer, but sometimes that's just how it is. Like, we don't always get to understand the inside of other people's marriages, even if we want to. And I think if that happened, you would need to back off. But please write back. Like, let us know if you do talk to Loretta, what she says, if she seems clear on it, if you learned something new about something that's gone down between you guys that you didn't realize before, or what's going on, or maybe he is abusive and just really good at hiding it. Or, I mean, I don't think that's super likely given how they interact and the fact that this rule doesn't exist for anyone else, but it's a possibility. I just still have so many questions. I don't feel great about any answer.
Please let us know everything.
Yeah, please. And please, Loretta, call us back. Loretta, call us. If you think this is you, if someone's reading this and they're like, huh, this is weird. This might be me. Please call us. Go ahead and read this last one, please.
Subject: coaching staff with annoying personalities. How do I deal with an employee who does good work, has no performance issues, but annoys the crap out of everyone? Mary comments on everything repeatedly, e.g. if it's hot, she'll say, it's hot out there. Don't you think it's hot out there? I think it's hot. Oh boy, but a ton of people are sweating today. And then every time a new person enters the building, she'll repeat it to them. Often this will be followed by a lot of repetitive comments about the weather, what it'll be like the next day, that weekend, next week. If someone leaves a pen on the counter rather than putting it back in a pen cup, she'll walk around to every staff person and say, is this your pen? This pen was on the counter, just looking to see if anyone's lost their pen. She'll ask everyone individually, even if several people are nearby and would obviously pipe up if they had indeed lost their pen. I'm at a loss for how to coach an employee who, performance-wise, has no issues. Although she drives us crazy because we're around her all day, customers love her, and she is well-known in the community. She is an older person who lives alone, so I think she's just used to talking to herself a lot and doesn't notice when other staff members give signs that they're tiring of her conversation. She isn't talking about anything inappropriate, so I don't see how I can forbid the behavior without restricting all staff conversation, which isn't realistic or fair. It's a tiny facility, so there's no, quote, go work in another room option. help. What do I do? I started out by basically telling everyone else to suck it up and be nice. But truthfully, Mary has gotten on my last nerve as well. Sometimes I can cut things short, like telling her, just put the damn pen away. But I'm at a loss on how to do this with her frequent observations about things like weather. Please tell me I have options other than be miserable until she retires or fire a beloved local granny for being too chatty.
Oh, man. I have a lot of sympathy for everyone in this letter.
Everyone. Everyone.
Who do you fear that you are? Like, who do you see yourself as in this letter in your life?
The person getting annoyed. And then eventually, possibly this chatty older lady who lives alone and, you know, is getting, here's the thing, she's getting a lot of positive feedback for her personality. She's loved by the community. It sounds like people like being greeted by her. They don't know that she's talked about the weather with every single person. They just know, hey, here's this smiling face and this person who wants to talk about something and seems interested. And then at the same time, though, I'd go insane.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes there are people who are like that, who are fantastic with customers. And it's always kind of a shock to their coworkers because they're like, you drive me out of my mind. And I can't imagine how this somehow works. But somehow when you put them in front of a customer, it like just focuses them just enough that they seem like welcoming, expansive, exciting to be around and not a frustration. So do you feel like there is an option for this letter writer beyond wait for her to retire or fire her? Do you feel like there's anything in between?
I guess, can he figure out a way, he or she, can this person, this supervisor, figure out a way to maybe just eliminate one of the annoyances? So talking about the weather makes sense. You're greeting people, fine. But like maybe the pen situation can be dealt with.
Yeah, I think there's a couple different boundaries that are important to work with, one of which is just like human beings are free to be annoying, right? And to talk about the weather. So in that sense, I think patience is a good idea. And to just think, this is going to sound really pretentious, but I think about this so often. You know that Marcus Aurelius quote about like begin each day by telling yourself, you know the one I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like I should also just say it for the readers. But so Marcus Aurelius writes this really great moment of begin each day by telling yourself, today I shall be meeting with interference, ingratitude, insolence, disloyalty, ill will, and selfishness, all of them due to the offender's ignorance of what is good or evil. And it's great. I like first read it in Woodhouse and I loved it because I think then like Bertie Wooster's immediate response was, oh, did he say that? Well, then you can tell Marcus Aurelius he's a silly ass. And I feel like both of those things are really true.
Yeah.
But like, yes, in addition to doing what I think you should do, you should also remember, like, that is a part of life. You are always going to have someone in the office who talks too much about the weather. And that's not an accident. That's not a mistake. That's part of the, like, terrible joy of being in a society with other living beings, is you're just going to run into people who drive you nuts, even though they're well-meaning and kind and get their work done. And to bear in mind, like the supervisor says, this woman gets her work done. The like interruptions are irritating, but not at a point where like no one else can get their work done. So to keep it in its right place, right? Like it's annoying. I think you can address it. I think you can give her useful feedback and try to move her in a different direction. But this is not as bad as it feels, right? Because it feels like you should rip your skin off, but it's not actually that bad.
Oh,
so that's one thing to bear in mind.
Can you imagine how
awful?
I was going to say, like, can you imagine how awful that must feel on a daily basis where you're just looking at this woman who's like this sweet older lady and you want to murder her?
Oh, and then you feel horribly guilty.
Yeah.
So then you try to like reach out to her because you're like, I'm such a bad person. She's not mean. She's not gossiping. She's not saying unkind things. I should try harder. And then she drives you crazy. And then you think, oh, my goodness, I am such a bad person that even when she's being nice to me, I want to stab her in the face. And that makes you act with more repulsion.
Totally.
And it just continues this cycle that Mary has no idea that this is going on. But inside, you're dying 100 deaths every day just talking to her about pens.
What's your second piece of advice? Because that was it for me. Just suck it up. Maybe find a way to deal with the pen situation.
So as the supervisor, I think, you should encourage your other employees that you previously said just suck it up and just say, you know, listen, if Mary is keeping you from your work, talking about the weather, it is okay to kindly and politely say, I've got to get back to work now. I think we should all feel free to say that more often. There's a lot of people who will write in and they will feel trapped by a coworker who is very, very chatty. It is not rude to say, we'll have to talk more later. I've got to get back to work, and then not necessarily get back to it later. So update the suck it up announcement you gave to everyone else and let them know, like, if it's interfering with what you're doing, please know that, like, you're not going to get in trouble. That's not rude. It's okay. And then for you, supervisor, this is part of why I'm so glad I don't supervise anyone. I think you do get to talk about this with her in the context of, like, a general performance review. Not that you necessarily have to wait till next quarter or whatever, but you can, you know, wait until you are talking about a project or something else that she's working on. And then just say, you know, there's something I also want to address with you. I want to keep it in its right place. This is, like, not anywhere near a 9 or a 10 on a 1 to 10 scale. But I've noticed that sometimes you will, you know, initiate off-topic conversations that go on for a really long time. And I want to make sure that there are times to take breaks and chat. But I also don't want that to be ongoing throughout the day. I want to make sure that everyone is able to get their work done. And I've noticed that sometimes you will repetitively ask people about the weather or ask a lot of questions of the same people in a row. And I would love to see you check that behavior, rein it in. Doesn't mean you have to take a vow of silence every day when you come into the office, but it's something that I've noticed and it seems to be a bit of a distraction. And I'd love to help you minimize that. And I think that that's both kind and honest. And, you know, that's not like yelling at an old woman, like, shut up, no one cares what you think. And it's phrasing it, you know, framing it in the context of making sure everyone's getting their work done.
Exactly. I mean, it's a small facility, so it can be distracting. That completely makes sense. That's a way to talk about it.
And then, like, in the moment when it comes up, it is, again, okay for you as a supervisor. Not every day, not all the time, but to say something like, sounds like nobody's going to claim the pen. Go ahead and put it back in the pen cup and, you know, then follow it up with a work question, like, do you have such and such a report? And again, to say that patiently, to say it kindly, not to say it like, no one knows whose pen it is. Please, Mary, stop. Like, don't let it get to that point. But you absolutely can, with discretion, interrupt the interruption.
Agreed.
Yeah. And then beyond that, like, if she wants to ask you what the weather's going to be like, you can just say, you know, I don't know, and I'm going to get back to work.
Yeah. And I mean, that's some personal work that the supervisor has to do too. Like, we have to learn how to tolerate other people.
Right. And so those are things you can do. Those are not necessarily going to be cure-alls. She is still going to be chatty. And so it is after you have done all you reasonably can to limit and forestall this behavior that you get to remember our old friend Marcus Aurelius and remind yourself, this is the, you know, kind of downside of my office. Other offices have something like this, and this is mine. And my job every day is to think of Mary as an opportunity to be patient, to be clear, to offer helpful feedback to my employees, and not to let myself get to a point where I want to, you know, throw someone out a window.
Oh, hopefully not.
Yeah. I mean, again, I use a lot of, like, throwing yourself out of things or throwing people into volcanoes imagery. And I hope everyone just is aware this is very hyperbolic. I don't want anyone to throw anything anytime, anywhere, I guess, unless they're playing a sport. All right, Max, take us away on the next one.
Subject: I love a bidet, except when I don't. Dear Prudence, I recently got my longtime partner a bidet for his house. We live apart. I grew up in a country where they are common, and he has always wanted one. He installed it and loves it, and often thanks me for it. However, he now refuses to buy toilet paper for his house, saying that it's saving him a lot of money to not buy it. I pointed out to him that I tend to pee quite a few times when I am over at his place, and I do not want to wash and dry myself every single time. To counter that, he offers me a clean shop towel to wipe with, which I then put on the floor, hang up and hope nobody mistakes for a hand towel, sneak into his kitchen and leave it there for him to dry his dishes. I did start bringing over my own TP, but when I left it in his bathroom one time, I came back to realize he had used it all up blowing his nose or something. So he refuses to buy toilet paper. He offers me what I consider to be a kind of gross solution. He doesn't always have clean shop towels, and he'll blithely use my supply unless I hide it. I have created a monster. please give me one of your devastating scripts so I can impress upon him how terrible this is. People in my home country would be appalled. He is otherwise a delightful person.
I have been silently screaming the entire time you read this letter.
I love this letter so much.
First of all, letter writer, you did not create a monster. Don't put this on you. Like, giving someone a bidet does not mean they suddenly turn into someone who's like, oh, it's cool if you wipe yourself with this old dish towel, right? Like, that is him. He has created the monster. He is his own Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster. And you are just like the innocent, innocent village girl who gets thrown in a lake.
Yeah. Cards on the table. I love bidets. I would love to have one, but I would also keep my bathroom supplied with toilet paper because I am a human being who lives in a society and that is what you do.
Yeah. Like,
does this guy never have anybody else come around to his house? What does he do if his landlord comes around? I guess he probably owns the house.
I just...
What do you do if your landlord comes around and needs to use the restroom and you just have a bidet?
I mean, like, how much was this guy spending on toilet paper that he's like, oh, I'm saving so much money on toilet paper? Like, toilet paper is not... I feel bad because, like, just a couple weeks ago I did my rant about the Charmin Bears and now I feel like this is a toilet paper themed podcast. But, like, toilet paper's not that expensive. And especially, like, if you have the bidet for, I don't know, half of the toilet usages, you're using at least half as much. Like, you're still cutting down... Man, you were given a free bidet and you would be spending less in toilet paper. You're still saving money, my man. Like,
I tell you what you do with this guy. You drag him to Costco. It doesn't even have to be Costco, like any supermarket. Pick up one of those giant packs that has like 24, 48, whatever, how many rolls of toilet paper in it. You drag him to the checkout line and you make him buy that for you.
Yes.
And then you keep it at his apartment. And if you need to, you put it in the closet and just pull out a roll when you're there so that he's not tempted to use it all up because it's sitting out. If need be, you buy him a couple of boxes of Kleenex as well so that he can use that for other
things.
Again,
he is paying for this. You've already bought him the bidet.
Yes, absolutely.
You are not buying him Kleenex so that he can blow his own damn nose.
But yeah, it doesn't sound like he's going to do this without you making him do it. So drag him to Costco, make him buy this stuff. It is not an unreasonable expectation.
He had better be so delightful. Like, when he speaks, I need to know that, like, lilies and pearls and rubies are dropping from his lips. Like, he needs to be the best guy alive for this to be a non-deal breaker. So I'm going to take your word for it. You say he's your longtime partner. Boy, howdy. You get to really impress upon him that this is a come to Jesus moment, that this is, you know, like, the dish towel thing is right out, right? Like, that is, again, feel free to use strong language when you speak to him about this, but just say, I can't even believe I'm coming up with a script for this, because this is, again, like, yeah, this is a moment where it's like, hey, in order for me to come over to your house, here is something I need from you. Never, ever, 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 ever again suggest that I use an old shop towel to wipe myself with and then leave on the floor. That is disgusting. If you had told me that on our first date, there would never have been a second date. I don't want our relationship to be tainted with thoughts of like a piss towel. So take that off the table, my darling love. I can't believe I'm coming up with this script. But yes, yeah. Here's what we're doing. We're going to Costco right now. You're going to buy a supply of toilet paper that you keep in the closet in your bathroom for people who do not need a full bidet experience and would like to treat their undercarriages like they live in the 21st century. And you're not going to use it to blow your nose. If you need a lot of Kleenex for that, get it, keep it somewhere else. This is a non-negotiable for me. The next time I come over, if there's not toilet paper in the house, I'm not going to stay. I'm going to go home. This is not a reasonable thing we need to compromise on. This isn't like, oh, two reasonable adults see something differently. This is a basic hygiene issue, and you need to do this for me. I'm a human being, and I need to be treated like one. We are not having an argument about this. And if he's really delightful, he will hear the phrase piss towel said about himself and he will feel shame. And sometimes shame is good. Sometimes shame is necessary. It reminds us to not have piss towels. And that's good. We shouldn't have those lying around. You should not hand someone a hand towel and no game plan. Like, oh, here, wipe yourself this with this and then I don't care what you do with it. You gotta have a strategy, my man. Oh, I want to set him up with Jane. Honestly, I just want these two monsters to ruin each other's lives and, you know, possibly be quarantined on like an island where they can just be horrible at one another. Thanks for listening to this special greatest hits episode of Dear Prudence. Today you heard from Joss Lavery, Mike Kaplan, Alexis Coe, and Max Thornton. Our producer is Audrey Dilling. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Don't miss an episode of the show. Head to slate.com/dearprudence to subscribe. And remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR. That's 3327. And you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute tops.